Is it on? You can hear me now. The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico, Field Yates, and Mike Clay with Stefan Bell, Daniel Dapakalsapi, and crew hanging out with you on Thursday, October 22nd. You know what's back this week? Thursday Night Football.
Yes, sir.
We had a one-week hiatus because the Bills-Chiefs game was pushed back to Monday after the Bills play the Titans on Tuesday. Don't know that we have ever seen an NFL team play on just one day rest. The Bills got a little bit of extra time to prepare. Some are calling this, the game of the century tonight.
I am.
I am too. That's right. Because with a win tonight, the Eagles or Giants will tie the NFC East lead with two wins.
Wow.
Epic proportions. Basically, the Super Bowl. Again, I've been waiting my entire life for a game like this, Mike. Have you?
I've had better days as an Eagles fan.
Okay.
Just say that for sure. There have been more important games in the last 5 years, I would say, for the Eagles. But I don't know. Who knows? I mean, the way this NFL season's gone. Now, let me be clear. The way the NFL goes in general, right? I mean, Teams can sneak, you know, go 7-9, sneak into the playoffs and make a run toward the Super Bowl. We've seen it happen before. Maybe not 7-9, but you get my point, right? But I don't know. It's intriguing. You know, as an Eagles fan, they're getting healthier, obviously, to some extent. Maybe they can make a run at it. I don't know. It's a wide open
division. Let's have some fun right now. Okay. We'll get to fantasy football in just a second. But can we go around the table or whatever, the studio, and ask who is going to win the NFC East and how many wins they will have in winning that division? Are you guys prepared mentally to do that?
Yes.
Okay.
Sure.
Do you want me to start?
Sure.
I got the Eagles with 7 wins winning the division. What do you got, Mike?
That's exactly what I was going to say. I'll say 7.5 since they have a tie.
So. Ooh, you are. That's not allowed.
So 7.
Okay. What do you got, Daniel?
I got the Cowboys at 6-10.
Okay. Cowboys 6-10. Kyle, you want to whisper? Same thing as
Cowboys and 7.
Stefania. Oh, Cowboys and 7, he says. Stefania, what do you think? Who's winning this division and how many wins? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. I'm so unenthused.
It's like a red zone question.
So unenthused by the question.
But I probably will go with the Eagles somewhere in that 7.
Wow.
6-7 win. Okay. However, if suddenly something should happen and Alex Smith gets named the starter, I'm taking Washington.
Yeah, Matthew just texted me Washington with 4 wins. So he'll take the Washington football team, which, by the way, sounds like it'll be the Washington football team for next year as well. Yep. So
can we get Arizona back in the NFC East?
Remember
when
those,
we were kids, they were in the NFC.
That's
get them back in there. And
yeah.
That division deserves an extra team.
Like, it really does.
I feel like whoever wins the East should just be like, you know what? We get it.
So the NBA, the NHL, and the MLB all modified their playoff format this year. I know Roger Goodell's a loyal listener. Maybe this would be a chance for him to consider amending the NFL playoff format for just 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Expand it. Maybe write a provision that we can have the Cardinals in if they have a superior record and they finish in third place in the NFC West
over the
NFC East champion.
That and Ryan Fitzpatrick has to play in the playoffs.
He's like,
he just goes to a team that's in the playoffs.
What about, can we loan Ryan Fitzpatrick and Jameis to the NFC East?
Yeah.
Please. I feel like it'd be awesome.
Be awesome. So here we are yesterday, just minding my business on a otherwise quiet Wednesday afternoon, and I'm looking at the transactions in the ESPN War Room League, our 16-team fantasy league that includes myself, Stefania, Matthew, and many of the people you may be familiar with at ESPN, Teddy Bruschi, Chris Mortensen, our boss Seth Markman, some of the producers. We've got also Adam Schefter. And I happened to catch that Adam Schefter added Antonio Brown to his roster.
What? He's not on a team. He's suspended.
I'm like, wait, Antonio Brown? Yeah, he's suspended for 2 more weeks. If you include this Sunday and next. And then, not long after that, you know what Adam Schefter does? He tweets, because he tweets frequently, and he is the best Twitter follow because he is the ultimate insider in the NFL. He tweets that Antonio Brown is garnering interest from multiple teams. His 8-week suspension, again, is due to expire in 2 Sundays from now. And that the Seahawks are amongst those teams that are interested in Antonio Brown and perhaps need to be considered, at least in my interpretation, very much in the mix, right? I mean, I think it would stand to reason that if Shefty is reporting on them being interested without reporting on other teams being interested, they would be near the top of the totem pole to acquire Antonio Brown when his suspension is over. So let's not dive too deep, Mike, into his value specific to Seattle, because we have to start here. Just the idea that he's available in week 9 is not news. We knew that was the case. I mean, he could be available. But just because his name bubbled up yesterday, it reminded us of that. Should you, anybody, have done what I did yesterday, which was immediately add him in as many leagues as you possibly could right away?
It depends on the size. If I'm in a 10-team league with 5 or 6 bench spots, I think that's going to be tough.
Okay.
Right? It's going to be tough unless your team's in really rough shape. We also have to keep in mind, too, that regardless of where he goes, it's not a sure thing it's going to pan out or that he's going to play right away. He might not be, you know, a guy that's on the fantasy radar until the fantasy playoffs, if ever. So, I mean, he's 32. He's played 21 snaps over the past 2 seasons. He hasn't played 16 games since 2015. I mean, I have some hesitations here. We've seen situations like this not work out before, but I see, you know, I threw some low bids in there, just add him on the end of the bench and some 12-team leagues, maybe deeper leagues, but
I added
you're a little
leagues.
More confident than
I am. You know why? Because you know what I am? I'm like the rest of the people. I'm a man of the people here because you mentioned 21 snaps over the past 2 seasons. Do you guys remember what happened in those 21 snaps?
Touchdown.
I believe was it 5 catches for like 53 yards and a touchdown?
It was something like that.
He had practiced with the Patriots for like 15 minutes. And he had on 21 snaps, 16 or so fantasy points. Like, come on.
Maybe.
Well, 556? 556 and 1 was what Kyle just confirmed.
Oh,
456 and 1. Whatever. That still counts as 15.6 fantasy points. So I'm just, like, we always talk about, like, you know, the pantheon of great wide receivers in the NFL history. And it's Jerry Rice. There's a huge, huge gap. And I'm not sure who is next. We can have a healthy debate about that. But Antonio Brown, statistically, and from an ability standpoint, is one of the best wide receivers we've ever seen. And there were no signs of physical decline. If there are many things you can say about Antonio Brown, one of them you cannot say is that the dude does not care about his physical fitness as it pertains to the football field, right? The guy is an absolute athletic freak and he keeps himself in pristine shape. So I'm a little bit more giddy about this. And maybe this is because right now, when I'm looking at the waiver wire in some of my leagues, like I am choosing between like Jamichael Hasty and, you know, Joe Flacco, right?
Okay. Well, I mean, is that a 16-team league? That sounds like a 16-team
league. Well, I have some pretty competitive leagues that I play in. Okay. So we take our stuff pretty seriously.
Right, I see. Okay.
Yeah, but
I
still 10-team leagues, though. Still 10-team leagues, right? Like there are some 10-team leagues that I play in where I am still more encouraged about taking him over some of the people that I've seen available on the waiver wire right now. So
I'm thinking about my stacked 10-team league and our focus league. See, that's what I'm thinking about. But once we get into but seriously, 10-team leagues, I think it's tough to justify. He doesn't have a roster rate yet. It's a couple weeks away.
I know.
12-team leagues, then you start to get into that conversation where your bench options are.
Let me ask you
guys
this.
You're talking about like Jeff Wilson, you know.
Is there a scenario that exists in which Antonio Brown signs with the team, is available to play as soon as week 9, and as soon as week 10 or 11, he is the most valuable player amongst the wide receivers on that team and immediately becomes a top 25 fantasy option at that position, maybe even higher?
What team
I
would
think
that
so.
Be? That would be...
Say, if we went to Baltimore, he'd be super valuable. I know that DK Metcalf and Seattle have been, and Tyler Lockett have been unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But still, if Russell Wilson has Antonio Brown, Antonio Brown has Russell Wilson, I'm going to have a hard time not putting him inside my top 25 because Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
You're a wet blanket, Mike.
Look, you know me. I'm playing that Buzz Killington role. But we've played this game with talented receivers for a while. I mean, look, I know that they're not on the exact same level for sure, but I mean, it's different reasons. I was going to point to Josh Gordon's just talent ability, but even when he was playing and he was good to go, it's not like he was a great fantasy option.
Like Antonio Brown's
That's why I stopped talking halfway through that sentence. Nonetheless, I think there's also plenty of reasons to believe that it could not pan out. So again, it just depends on your other options. I think there's a time and a place and a situation where you might want to throw them on your bench, but especially as we get into 4 teams off a week with byes right now, you need roster space right
now.
Depends on your situation. I don't think he's a must roster in every format. I wouldn't say that.
I disagree, but that's also, this could be a sort of roster philosophy thing.
Are you dropping like T. Higgins or A.J. Green or LaVisca Chenault?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would keep T. Higgins. But if he's on my bench, if he's like a guy that I'm not starting right now, I drop him over Antonio Brown. It's Antonio Brown. Because the team, like, here's the thing about Antonio Brown as well, is that I would be very surprised that if Antonio Brown signs somewhere, if it's somewhere that's like not a worthwhile option, right? So I don't know what worst case scenario would be for Antonio Brown in terms of which team he could sign with. I don't have a perfect, like, they don't throw the football effectively at all team. And as a result of that, like if you went to Washington, for example, okay, that probably would be one of the least desirable spots for him to end up with, the Jets or Washington. He's not going to go to the Jets or Washington. He's going to go somewhere where he's got an excellent quarterback that probably has complete command and ownership of that locker room, like Seattle, maybe somewhere like Baltimore, where obviously he's got a cousin on the team in Hollywood Brown. Lamar Jackson has spent some time working out. There's a reverence there. But Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay, like, I think he's, if he goes somewhere, it's going to be somewhere that has a really desirable situation for him, which in turn would be a really desirable situation in fantasy football.
Yeah, I'd like to see Green Bay. I feel like that's his clearest path to a every
down. Can you imagine Jordan Love to Antonio Brown?
Right?
Yeah.
Right, when they trade Rodgers, right? That's he had a bad game, right? You saw his presser yesterday. What was it, yesterday or 2 days ago?
Yeah. Oh, man.
He seems motivated against Houston. But anyway, I do like that fit. Maybe Indianapolis, but even like Baltimore and New England, you know, they're just so run heavy. That bothers me a little
bit. The feeling that New England, the ship has probably sailed.
Yeah, I agree.
But also, if it did happen, you'd think that probably pretty quickly they would alter their offensive strategy a little bit. It's a fascinating situation. I'm of the belief you go ahead and roster him right now. Mike is a little bit more patient, and maybe in 2 weeks from right now, he's still unsigned, and there's no sign of him being added by a team. And oh, by the way, the NFL is still investigating other off-field matters, which we should not be ignoring right now. Antonio Brown's got to show that he can stay on the straight and narrow and that he's a changed man, which has been offered to him many times before, and he has not held up his end of the bargain. So he needs to prove that he can stay on the field with whatever team he eventually signs with.
I have a question.
Please.
Did Antonio Brown ever find a helmet that he would wear before
That's a good
he left?
Point.
You know what? I actually just, and I don't want to spoil the reason why, but I just bought a helmet off of Amazon, and it looks pretty comfortable, and you can construct it yourself. So if he hasn't, Stefania... Then,
last time, if you recall, he wanted to wear the one that was now outlawed.
Oh, yeah.
And then he drew his own insignia.
He painted it. Oh, yeah. Literally painted the helmet.
That's the last I remember. So if you're comfortable with him, if we know he's going to put a helmet on, that's my number one question is, when he gets there, will he wear the right helmet?
Antonio Brown's 2019 was everybody else's 2020, if you think about it. Right? I mean, he freezes his feet off. He has the helmet thing. He gets cut and traded twice in 7 months. Oh, boy. All right, let's get to some injuries. And, of course, nobody better do that than Stefania Bell. And, Stefania, because of the short-term IR rules this year, every time a player goes on IR, my mind goes to, oh, he could miss three games. He'll only miss three games, like Austin Eckler. Right? Or not right?
No, and, you know, maybe you remember that when it happened, I believe it was Adam Schefter who reported that he was expected to miss 4 to 6 weeks and maybe the long side of that. And when we first talked about Eckler's injury on the show, I talked about the position he was in when he sustained that injury. It was kind of this jackknife position where your hamstring gets stretched over the hip and the knee, which really makes it vulnerable to a serious injury. Well, you hear Anthony Lynn's comments yesterday that this was, quote, a very serious hamstring injury and that his return is going to be later rather than sooner. And it just all fits together. This always had the picture of being one of the more serious types of hamstring injuries. And you certainly don't want to come back too quickly because you'll end up right back out the door on IR. So, I've been watching his Instagram posts. Sometimes when players post their workouts, it lets me know how far along they are. And everything's been pretty conservative so far. I mean, certainly upbeat and he's working out, but pretty limited work at this point. So I would say the way Anthony Lynn's talking and judging from the nature of the injury, at least 6 weeks.
Okay. Well, there's probably not much action here, right? Not much you can do with this information as it pertains to your roster, but good to know that you may have to start Justin Jackson or Joshua Kelly a bunch going forward. Michael Thomas, Stefania, is one of the sagas of the NFL season. He's played one game so far. It's week 7. Last week, actually the last 6 weeks, he's been dealing with a hamstring issue. I'm sorry, an ankle issue. And he obviously had the fight with the teammate.
Right.
But now he's listed with a hamstring issue. What's going on here?
Right. Is he this year's Antonio Brown? That's the question.
Oh, no. Oh, man.
You know, because last it was a fight with a teammate that got him suspended from the team. And then the team was practicing yesterday and Antonio Brown was there at the beginning, then left. But he apparently returned later for team drills. It's not really clear when this hamstring issue popped up. They did have a bonus practice on Monday. So was it something that happened Monday, something that happened Tuesday? He also cryptically tweeted after that suspension about a setback. So it's really unclear when it happened and how significant it is. Sean Payton not committing to Michael Thomas being available this week, at least not committing just yet.
Wow. All right. Well, here's my best piece of advice. Watch fantasy football now on Sunday, a little after the inactives are released, because we'll ask Adam Schefter about it. He has him on his War Room League team, and a couple weeks ago he gave us a play-by-play.
He didn't know.
Yeah.
Last time he had no idea when we did the show because it was that up in the air. Hopefully we'll have a better indication this time, and certainly if he does a little more in practice today or tomorrow, we'll have a better idea.
As we know, a lot of players don't practice on Wednesday, but it does not preclude them from playing on Sunday. So let's run through those that are most notable. Stefania, we begin in Cincinnati.
Yeah, there's a few here. Joe Mixon, now he had a foot injury that was problematic this past week, and Zach Taylor said that they were going to have more information after he got further evaluation done early in the week. We haven't heard any of that information. All we saw was that Joe Mixon did not practice. So at this point, it's hard to interpret what that means, but obviously stay tuned. Moving on to Julio. This is me.
Wow. Julio Jones.
Wow. I don't think I've ever made that mistake. And I apologize, Julio, because you know you're one of my favorites, even though Daniel does not like
you.
Oh,
my goodness.
Julio Jones with the hamstring obviously had this breakthrough game last week and didn't look like his hamstring was bothering him at all. I don't worry a bit about him being a do not practice middle of the week, because remember last week, the only practice he had was a limited session on Friday before he ended up in that game. So this could be a trend for him going forward. Like a lot of veterans, whether it's less practice in the week and then they're fine on the weekend. Marvin Jones, who knows? Daniel, you know how the Lions are.
Yep.
Talking about injuries. They give us nothing. But also his production last weekend wasn't really that different from what it's been. It's not like there was a big revelation about anything that happened in the game. So again, stay tuned for what happens the rest of the week, but not really a lot to draw from that. And then Robert Tonyan had an ankle injury. You saw that he was exited the game briefly, but he was able to come back into the game, which is always a good sign. So I'm going to take this as a middle of the week, did not practice, and probably see an upward trend as the week goes on.
I would think, Mike, that the one that catches our attention most there, based off Stefania's reporting and also just the value of this player when he is healthy, is Joe Mixon. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't closely monitored Giovanni Bernard or maybe even Travion Williams, like, is it possible, who's been a healthy scratch, they could turn to him in a pinch if need be?
I think so. I mean, Bernard's obviously been around a while. They like him in passing situations. I think he would dominate those snaps. And we've actually seen Mixon pick up some of that in the past couple of weeks, right? So I think Bernard would kind of get back on track in that department, would still be the lead guy. But Williams would certainly be mixed in, could potentially see 10 or 12 carries in that game. But just keep in mind, if you look back at the past couple of years when Mixon's been out, Bernard has been basically a strong running back one at times. So If I have Mixon, I would make sure I scoop up Bernard right now.
All right. Bernard likely available in a good number of leagues on waiver wires. He also, and Daniel is more of the facial hair enthusiast on this podcast, but I would put his mustache in the top three in sports right now.
I don't think I disagree with that at all.
I don't know who else has a top shelf mustache that needs to be considered in that same conversation. We got a lot of good beards in sports, right? James Harden, Daniel Dopp.
Sure.
I don't know who else.
You know,
Fisher's got a great mustache. He is not active, though.
True story, real quick. Steve Smith came here, done a number of things here. A former, you know, Panthers wide receiver, fantastic. Was growing out a beard. And I did a thing with him, and his agent told me, he was like, man, your beard is fantastic. Fast forward to a year, and Steve had promised me that he was going to grow the beard out, and his agent actually tracked me down the next time that he came through, and he said, hey, I want you to know this. Steve saw your beard, and after trying to grow it out for the first week, he was like, I'm never going to be able to do something like that. And so he shaved it off and never went back to the beard again.
You retired Steve Smith's beard.
That's true.
Wow.
Yeah.
Steve Smith, who, like, no NFL defender could retire him for like 17 great years.
Yep.
And Daniel, it took him a week to shut that beard down.
Wow.
Wow.
That's intimidation right there.
Yeah, you want to put me on that shadow report?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, let's get to some of the players that were limited in practice Wednesday. And then after that, Stefania, a really, really interesting situation to discuss in Las Vegas. But we begin with the Titans, who are now on a normal practice week again.
I know. It's amazing. Like 7 days in a row after a game. But Jonnu Smith came out of last week's game with an ankle sprain. We were told that it was minor. I think it's encouraging whenever you have a guy who has an injury that was sustained the prior week and they're out on the field doing anything the first session of the week. You take that as a sign of encouraging things to come. So you feel good about that. Noah Fant, last week was his first week back dabbling with the ankle, and Vic Fangio said he had about a 50-50 chance a couple days before. They obviously thought better of it and held him out. Probably a good thing because he hadn't really done that much, didn't appear to be moving around so well. Back this week, I think if he... he was limited, as we're noting here. I think if he trends upward towards full at the end of the week, that he will be on the field this week. I think that's the feeling around Denver, is that he's got a good shot to play. Kareem Hunt back on the injury report. Remember the first time it was a groin injury. He played through that, played well. Then it was a thigh issue, still played without limitation. Now it's ribs that has him on the injury report. But you know, he played most of the game last week, except at the very end when Dontrell Hilliard came in. So I don't think this is something that's going to keep Kareem Hunt sidelined. This is probably maintenance because he's the guy now with Nick Chubb out. So you have to limit his touches in practice. Jamison Crowder, you know, he's on the injury report with a groin issue, and Adam Gase didn't mention it before practice when talking to reporters, as Rich Cimini noted. So it could have been something that just cropped up yesterday, and that always makes you a little more nervous. If it happened in practice, we should learn more today. And then DJ Chark played 57 of 64 offensive snaps last week, and that was with him coming into the game very questionable because of the ankle. The fact that he was able to do so much, still on the injury report, that's a maintenance holdover. I'm quite confident of that and expect to see him back out there this week.
Stefania, you said that Kareem Hunt and Jamison Crowder were both dealing with what?
No.
Would you say it for me?
A groin injury?
Okay, got it. I didn't want to interrupt the video because they're so valuable, but I wanted to make sure that we got it in there because we had a couple of them, you know?
I know. I'm so pleased. If people still, you know, one day we'll have to go back.
Yeah, we'll have to explain all that again.
The Jets can't have nice things.
No.
I feel bad for the Jets. Jamison Crowder's awesome. He's like my favorite player on the Jets.
Are there the only player on the Jets?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, what candidates do we have besides that?
The guy we were talking about before the show, Jeff Smith, of course.
Yes.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Quinnen Williams is cool. I like Quinnen.
I love Quinnen Williams.
Me too. I hope he does really, really well in his career.
Like, Kalen Ballage was there for a while, obviously. That didn't last long, but
wow.
That would
Chargers
be one.
Leading rusher by week 12, potentially. Yeah, I feel for your Jets.
Not Chris Herndon, unfortunately, as someone who was all over him in the offseason.
Maybe Trevor Lawrence one day, maybe.
Yeah.
Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves, but maybe. Stefania, as I mentioned, sort of an interesting situation taking place in Las Vegas right now. We know the NFL is perpetually updating and refining its COVID protocols. We also know that that can result in a lot of players all of a sudden not being in the office. So what's going on with the Raiders offensive line at the moment?
So Trent Brown, their tackle, was placed on the reserve COVID-19 list. Now, the Raiders are coming off a bye. So one of the things that is positive about them coming off a bye week is that they're not all together at the facility. And so they're hopeful that there wasn't too much contact between him and his teammates. However, John Gruden, in addition to talking about wanting to protect Trent Brown's health, sent the whole offensive line home from the facility as a precaution. Now, you referenced the protocols being updated, and one of the key points in the most recent protocol change is that the league and the NFLPA and the panel of experts came up with a separate tier of close contacts called high-risk close contacts. Now, we know that the individuals wear these connection devices when they're walking around the facility, and they register how much time and at what distance these players are from one another, and it helps with the contact tracing. But that high-risk close contacts doesn't necessarily mean just on the field or in the facility. For example, riding in a car together with the windows rolled up and masks off would generate a high risk, close contact situation should somebody test positive. So things, meals together, where your extended period of time beyond the 15 minutes, masks off because you're dining, those would be high risk, close contacts. So when this news came out, the point that I made was that high risk, close contacts now, even if they test negative and are asymptomatic, have to be away from this facility for 5 days after the exposure to the infected individual. So that means essentially they can return on the sixth day. And so I'm not saying that any of these people were identified as high risk, close contacts, but if that should happen, this now puts into position the chance for players to start missing games, even if they have negative tests. And I know that's a kind of a hard concept to understand, but it has to do with the amount of time that the virus can incubate and not really present itself. So you may not have symptoms, but it could be there and you could still be infectious. And at the end of the day, the main goal is to mitigate the spread of the virus. And that's why this came about. So Trent Brown right now is on the reserve COVID-19 list, and the whole offensive line was sent home out of precaution yesterday, and we wait to hear more. But also, as of now, the Raiders facility remains open.
Yeah, the starting offensive line was sent home, so they were playing with a cast of, who are you? As backup offensive lineman yesterday during practice, it does sound like, and we'll update the situation, and as Stefania laid out, there is a chance, if not a good chance, that the starters who are not on the COVID-19 list will be available on Sunday. If there are silver linings to what the Raiders have along the offensive line, it's not just that they're good players. It's been a lot of guys who have been there for multiple years now. Guys like left tackle Colton Miller and center Rodney Hudson and Gabe Jackson, one of their guards. Richie Incognito remains out because of an IR situation. But I mention that only because if there are players who might be able to afford to make it to Sunday with lesser practice reps, you would bank on guys who have been doing it for a while together. We'll monitor that in advance of their game Sunday night, the first time that John Gruden and Tom Brady play in the same game since the Tuck Rule game.
How about that for a pull? There you go.
You know, the rising generation of NFL superstars have been dropping dimes and creating in space for years, way before they got to the league. Now it's your turn. Create your own highlight reel with X-Factor abilities and innovative new skills, stick controls. Swag out and win in style in new backyard football-inspired mode. The Yard! Celebrate your style, showcase your creativity, and rise to fame in a way that only you can. Go all out and Madden NFL 21. Available now.
Do you ever feel like you're always on?
All the time.
These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nothing but nonstop hustle all the time. And everyone knows that nothing good comes from hustling. You got work, you have friends, you have family, you have a million pressing social issues, and the expectation to just be on and ready 24/7. Sometimes you just need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill. Coors Light. Watching football is therapeutic to fans. It is uninterrupted me time and an excuse to chill and drink beer. Coors Light is the official beer of watching any sport or team, just to drink beer. Mountain cold refreshment, made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. Make sure you celebrate it responsibly. It has a crisp and refreshing taste, as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. Perfect for a moment to unwind. Coors Light is the beer to choose when you need to unwind. So when you need to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door at get.coorslight.com, Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And please, don't forget, celebrate responsibly.
You know, Daniel, I'm sitting here during the show and I'm trying to concentrate and making this the best podcast / linear program ever.
Yep.
And I get a notification.
Uh-oh.
And I got an email.
Okay.
I believe it was a shadow report.
Oh, no.
Ooh, yeah.
Is that out already?
That's never good.
It's out already. You better believe it's out right now. And for those that are unacquainted with the shadow report, it is Mike Clay's baby. Mike Clay writes a piece every week. It's wide receivers and cornerbacks who are going to match up. It's wide receivers who might have difficult matchups or wide receivers who might stand to benefit because of an easier matchup. And I don't care if I've said this before on the podcast. I'm going to say it again. Mike's the OG of wide receiver cornerback matchups. Everybody else, playing for second. So Mike, let's begin with some wide receiver cornerback matchups and take a look at some wide receivers that could be in for good days on Sunday. I say 5-0. You say 5-0. We all say Titans, Steelers, can't wait for this one.
Yeah, this is going to be an awesome game. Really excited because Pittsburgh's schedule so far, a little light. I believe they've had four straight home games too. So it's going to be interesting.
Is that right?
Yeah, I believe so, right?
Wow.
They have a bye mixed in there. I think
yeah,
it's
that's
one,
crazy.
Two, three, four in a row. You don't see that often. Obviously, their schedule shifted around with
the
COVID stuff. But anyway, one of their, maybe their biggest challenge will come this week in Tennessee. And look, I don't think we've talked about Tennessee in this segment so far this season, but you know, they have really struggled without Adoree Jackson, who was just actually moved, designated to return. So yep. We'll see if when he's back. But for now, Malcolm Butler, Jonathan Joseph, Christian Fulton, the rookie, they've struggled. Fourth most fantasy points to receivers, fifth most to the perimeter and the slot. So across the board, it has been a problem there for them. Top five in receptions, yardage, touchdowns allowed. Just, again, across the board, they've given up a ton of fantasy production. So the question becomes, who's going to play, right? That's the big question, because Deontay Johnson is expected to go in this game. And remember, Chase Claypool, he's been fantastic the past couple of weeks. But those two, Claypool, Washington, and James Washington, Claypool, and Johnson all play on the outside. Juju Smith-Schuster's in the slot. But Claypool is Johnson's direct backup, right? So he barely played early on when Johnson was seeing all those targets. So who do we fire up? That's the tricky part for me. I don't know how much Johnson's going to play in his return, how much we could trust him. And honestly, I'm talking about all that. We also don't know what to do with Juju Smith-Schuster in the slot. This could be a game where finally they need him more in a different game script and utilize him more in a good matchup in the slot. So this is one of the biggest question marks of the weekend, is which Steelers can we trust this week?
Yeah, because to your point on Chase Claypool, it was the last time he and Deontay Johnson were playing together, he was not Chase Claypool, right?
No.
Like, he had made a couple of really cool plays. He didn't have five touchdowns in
five
two games.
Five targets in two games, I think
right? So it will be really interesting, but the matchups are good. Perhaps Chase Claypool keeps it rolling. Smart lineup decisions is informed by IBM Watson, and Christian Kirk's point production has increased each game this season and has a 14% chance to make a consecutive boom weeks against the Seahawks on Sunday. Because, Mike, is the matchup just right?
It is. It's a terrific matchup. And again, we've talked about this one before. Seattle, right? They've allowed them. They're coming off the bye, and we're still picking on them here. Most fantasy points allowed to receivers on a per game basis. Most to outside receivers. Fourth most to the slot. They've allowed the most fantasy points. Think about this, to both wide left receivers and wide right receivers. Both sides of the field. Most fantasy points allowed. It has been a major struggle. They've allowed 1,472 yards to wide receivers.
Sounds bad.
Shaq Griffin has allowed the most fantasy points among all players this season in coverage. They've already had their bye week. That's not even a per week basis. That's even with their bye week. So it's been a major struggle. Christian Kirk, we saw what a catch he had, that long touchdown against Dallas.
That was
fingertip catch.
Beautiful.
Awesome.
Keep his balance too after it.
Right.
Running. Yeah, very impressive.
Right. And he's, you know, he's been kind of up and down so far. Hasn't really done what you would expect from a second round pick. Good game last week, and perhaps he keeps it going in a great matchup here. He's on the outside 85% of the time, so he'll be up against Dunbar and Griffin throughout this game. If you, you know, probably on a lot of benches last week, but I feel like if you were wondering, should I put him in the flex now after that big game? I think the answer is yes.
I wonder if perhaps Christian Kirk just like gets it rolling in earnest right now. Because you're right, that was a great catch on Monday night. The targets have been really saturated to DeAndre Hopkins. As great as the Cardinals probably feel about a 4-2 start, they have not been perfect offensively.
No.
They're still finding their way. I mean, Kyler completed, what do we say, 9 passes on Monday night, right? 9 of 24. So I am not trying to downplay their start in any way. I'm just saying that, like, there is some more meat on the bone somewhere in that offense. And with all due respect to the Dan Arnolds and, you know, Andy Isabellas of the world, it feels like Christian Kirk is the most talented player on that offense who could use a much more expanded role in terms of volume.
No doubt.
Maybe a deep league consideration in the flex. Marvin Jones. Well, Stefan, you mentioned him earlier. Don't have much of an update. We just saw that he missed practice yesterday. So, Mike, if he does play on Sunday, would you consider starting him against the Falcons?
Yeah, and obviously we like, this applies to Kenny Golladay, who we like, Marvin Jones on the other side, even Danny Amendola to some extent in the slot, even though his targets have been down. But again, we're picking on the Atlanta every week. There's a reason for that. Fifth most fantasy points allowed to receiver, second most to the perimeter, second most to the slot as well. They've allowed just over 1,300 yards to wide receivers. That's second most. And they're actually allowing the worst yards per target in the league, over 10 yards per target. Incredible how much they have struggled against wide receivers this season. Marvin Jones, we'll see. all of these guys, AJ Terrell, the rookie, Kendall Sheffield, Isaiah Oliver. Sheffield has been torched since he's been back from injury and coverage this season. Terrell's coming around. You know, he started slow. He's coming around a little
bit. Week, yep.
But Isaiah Oliver was already demoted to nickel. He's playing in the slot now. So again, Jones will move around. He'll see all these guys. It's a great situation. And if he's able to go, maybe a get right game here, because it's been a slow start to him. And we expect him to be, he's a little boom bust, but still more of a, it's a weird thing to say, but like almost like a high floor lineup play, right? Like you just feel like he's a solid option every week as your wide receiver three or flex. He's been that for a long time. That has not been the case this season.
Yeah, it's tough because last year he was a top 20 wide receiver, even with Jeff Driskel and David Blau under center. Right. So for him this year, it just feels like, what's going on in that offense where he's not being involved the way that he was in previous years?
It's also crazy because everybody's going to be poo-pooing the Lions, as they always do, out of the gates this season, and they're going to be 500 by the time Sunday's over.
Wow. Can you believe that?
That would be enough to win the NFC East.
They'll be in first place in the NFC East. That's amazing. Oh, gosh. All right. One more here, Mike, on the matchup, but maybe not. Actually, I don't know. I don't know if this is an upgrade or a downgrade.
Great question.
Patrick Peterson, I think, is in the final year of his contract. One of the more interesting potential free agents this offseason. I love Patrick Peterson. One of my favorite players that I've watched in a long time in the NFL. It's been a little bit of an interesting couple of years here for him. So when you are evaluating DK Metcalf, his outlook on Sunday, is there a chance for a shadow? And if there is a chance for a shadow, does that help or hurt his cause?
This is a tricky one, okay? So let's talk through this a little bit. The Cardinals right now, believe it or not, are leading the NFL in zone defense, right? They're playing a ton of zone, complete opposite of the spectrum of Carolina, who's playing the least amount of zone, and they've been a surprise defense as well. But nonetheless, a ton of zone. It's put a lot of pressure on Peterson and Drake Kirkpatrick this season, but they've allowed very little fantasy production from opposing wide receivers, right? 11th fewest fantasy points to receivers. If you adjust for opportunity, it's actually the second fewest. They've allowed the third fewest to the perimeter, and they've only allowed four touchdowns to wide receivers. So across the board, the production's been good. And by the way, I just realized this as I'm saying it. It's the opposite. Most man coverage. That's why they're putting the most pressure on Peterson.
I was going to say.
The most zone is Carolina. I just realized as I'm talking,
to myself,
I'm saying that backward.
That was not Phil Snow's thing.
Yeah. Saying that backward. Most, stupid most zone in Carolina, most man in Arizona.
Nice.
Anyway, you got it now. So Peterson has only shadowed once a season as a product of what they've done with this defense. That was Terry McLaurin in week two. But he did shadow. This is where it gets really interesting. They shadowed DK Metcalf with him last season in week 16. In that game, Metcalf had one target and no catches. And in two career games against Arizona, he has five targets, one catch for 6 yards. So they had his number last season. Their defense has been surprisingly effective against wide receivers. So, I mean, you can't bench him, obviously. He's been too good, and he's certainly taken a step forward this year. But if there's a possible dud here, I mean, there's signs all over the place that this could be it. So if I'm setting a cash game lineup in DFS, I would stay away. But season long, you have to start him.
Mike set this up for a win-win because I'm going to start DK Metcalf. And if he plays awesome, I'm going to feel great because I'm probably going to win my matchup. And if he does not play well, I might be a little bit mad. But more so, I'm going to say, my guy Mike Clay.
That's right.
The man is the crystal ball of fantasy football, wide receiver, cornerback matchups.
Also, if that's the case, then why don't they just like cover up their numbers before the game? So that way they never have that guy's number.
That's a good point.
That's a good point. Because like if you stood Tyler Lockett, if you like switch your numbers, Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf, there's no way you would know which is which. There's just no
exactly
way to
tell. The same.
No, they're not Derrick exact Henry same. And Deion Lewis in wide receiver form.
Exactly.
Right? I mean,
all right. We're going to talk about some rankings in a second. I get the Jordan Love's outlook. But first, Stefania has an update on the Raiders. What do you got, Stefania?
Yeah, so Vincent Bonsignore, I hope I'm saying his name correctly. Oh. Apologies if I did not pronounce it correctly. But Vincent Bonsignore, Las Vegas Review-Journal covers the Raiders, tweeted this out. For the second straight day, the Raiders will be without their starting O-line and safety Jonathan Abram, who are in the contact tracing protocol due to the positive test of right tackle Trent Brown. And so I just want to reiterate that they are home and we can't assume, you know, I explained what could happen if anybody was defined as a high risk close contact, but you can still be a close contact without being a high risk close contact and have to go through a period of isolation while they do the testing and tracing. And if you are merely a close contact, and again, the offensive line was together on Monday when they practiced, then you have to be home and isolate and have two consecutive negative PCR tests. And there's some timing things that go through there. But as of right now, this is all we know, is that the offensive line as a unit, starting offensive line and safety Jonathan Abram, home away from the facility for the second consecutive day. Right.
And as Stefania, as you mentioned, the initial contact that we believe was, well, exposure, I should say, Monday. That's a very important date to note. Because obviously, as you mentioned, that 5-day window.
TikTok, right, to the Sunday.
I don't mean to, I just want to make this point known as well, because Keith, the great Keith Lipscomb, sent us a note yesterday about Joey Sly, the Panthers starting kicker, who is also on COVID-19, the reserve COVID-19 list. He is not positive. Mm-hmm. The transaction technically took place, putting him on the COVID-19 list, on the 19th, Monday. And that's important, because if it was Wednesday and you're talking about 5 days, then again, you might have an issue with Sunday. I'm not saying that Joey Sly will 100% kick on Sunday, but I'm just passing along that there is still a chance he will kick on Sunday. That's especially important because A, he's good, and B, he was a popular waiver wire pickup this week. So for those wondering on Joey Sly, keep your radar up. You may have to make another kicker move on Sunday, but there is a chance he does in fact play. Let's do a few minutes here of rankings talk, and then we'll preview basically the Super Bowl. We begin with Aaron Rodgers, who had a bad week last week. He was brutal. But he plays the Houston Texans. That's a really good thing, Mike. He is in a top set. He's a top seven player for all of us going into week seven. Aaron Rodgers should be back in a major way.
Yeah, no question. And you should ask him if opposing defenses have figured him out. If you have his number, text him, ask him that.
I can DM him. See how that goes? Yeah, we follow each other on TikTok. Can you TikTok DM or no?
I don't know. I've never downloaded TikTok. I'm sorry.
Why do I default to ask you? I don't know.
Okay, definitely don't do that. It will go poorly. But anyway, yeah, right. QB6 for me at Houston this week. 19-plus fantasy points in every game prior to that dud. He has three top 7 weeks. And it's a good matchup. Houston, top 8 in completion percentage and yards per attempt allowed. They've allowed 2-plus passing touchdowns in four of their six games. The exceptions there were run-heavy Minnesota and Baltimore. So across the board, it looks like a good matchup for him. I think he gets back on track here, Field.
Just want to pass just a quick update. The Eagles just officially placed Zach Ertz on IR. Mm-hmm. So that means he's going to miss at least 3 games. I don't know when the Eagles' bye is, but certainly that could impact things as well. So a prolonged absence here coming up for Zach Ertz. Mike, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Why do you have David Montgomery ranked inside your top 13?
Yes, Mike, please tell us.
Well, I write little notes for myself here, which side of the coin I am on players here. And I wrote David Montgomery, I'm high. So RB13. So you know, people ask us that all the time. I just wrote, I'm high. So maybe that's the answer.
Maybe that's what it is.
I don't know. Man. But anyway, the answer really is volume, right? I mean, volume over time will win for you. 39 carries, 19 targets over his past 3 games, 5 or more targets in every game. So they're certainly using him more in the passing game, which helps a lot. And by the way, I mentioned I have him RB13. Where's he finished the past 2 weeks? RB13, RB14. I mean, I'm right in the wheelhouse of where he's finished, even with a lack of efficiency. It's a mid-pack matchup here against the Rams. They've allowed a lot of receiving production this season. So I mean, that's where he's finished the past couple of weeks. I don't think that's a bold call by any means.
Yeah, I think it is.
It just doesn't feel good. Like, it never feels good to have David Montgomery be your second running back.
How about J.D. McKissic, Mike? Because he has been playing, sorry, Antonio Gibson, because J.D. McKissic has been playing a lot recently.
Yeah, I actually like Gibson a lot this week. It's really kind of surprising. We're going to talk about it later on the CSS DFS podcast as well. He's RB11 on my board, and the matchup's a big part of it here against the Cowboys. Look, he only has one top 20 week, but he's finished top 20 in 5 straight games with 10-plus points in every game, right? So he has had a decent floor. Since week 2, he's handling 56% of the carries and 4 targets per game. So the volume's okay. It's a very fast-paced Washington offense, one of the fastest in the NFL. The snaps haven't been there yet, but I think that'll change going forward if they keep operating this offense. And it's all about the matchup in this one. This is where the upgrade comes in. The Dallas Cowboys have faced the most rushing attempts by opposing running backs this season, also the most rushing yards allowed. They've allowed 7 rushing touchdowns. They've allowed, as a defense as a whole, the Cowboys have allowed the most touchdowns, the highest run rate against at 46%, and the 4th most plays against. So everything sets up for him. I mean, he's not the pass catcher. McKissic is, but he still gets involved there with 4 targets a game. But he is their primary ball carrier. This is a situation where I think he could get to 15 carries, and that would be a career high for him. So a lot sets up well in this matchup at home against Dallas.
All right, so I'm a little nervous. I do think you're right, but a little nervous. Only because, you know what, though? the Redskins, Washington football team, 15 push-ups for me. Dang it. I guess the Cowboys make everybody look reasonable.
Right.
They make everybody look reasonable.
Right, and he's good. I think he's good, right? I mean, yeah. A lot of size to him. He can handle that workload. We know how just
the Cowboys
great
are
of an athlete
they're the potion that makes everything look good.
Right.
All right, Mike, so how about Le'Veon Bell this week? You have the lowest rank for Le'Veon Bell this week amongst all people that are ranking. You've got him at 36. I've got him at 30. Daniel at 32. Basically, what we're saying is that like we're kind of hopeful because it's Andy Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, but there's some caution signs here.
Yeah, really quick. 9 touches projected for him, 16 for Edwards-Helaire. I think that might be optimistic for Bell in his first game. And by the way, Denver is outstanding against the run. Every running back room they have faced so far has been below their season average against them, and they played some decent teams, including Tennessee, Pittsburgh, Tampa Bay, even New England. Their running backs are, as a whole, are pretty good. So second views fantasy points to running backs. It's not a good matchup, and we don't know how much he's going to play, so I don't want him near my flex this week.
We'll see. Watch him just go crazy, right? That would be typical.
Yeah.
Andy Reid was non-committal on Le'Veon Bell playing. He just said, hey, I don't know if he's going to play this weekend, which is probably just coach speak, right? I think there's a pretty good chance that Le'Veon Bell will be active for the Chiefs. It's time to go all out in Madden NFL 21, which is available now. And the Madden spotlight this week surrounds Jamison Crowder. And Stefania gave us the injury update here, which he's got a groin. Is that what we heard? Groin?
I don't remember. There were so many of them. Some in the lower body of the...
So anyways, Le'Veon Bell... Sorry. Jamison Crowder, easy enough for me to say. A little bit banged up here, Mike. Is he still a top 15 play despite his quarterback? Which, as of right now, again, undetermined. We don't know if it'll be Sam Darnold or if it'll be Joe Flacco. Does it matter? And is he still a top 15-ish play?
Absolutely. Wide receiver 12 on my board. His targets this season are 13, 9, 11, and 13. Why would you ever consider benching a player like that? 11.5 targets per game. He averaged 8 a game from week 9 on last year. The guy is just a huge part of this offense, obviously. And by the way, he's 3 games to 7 plus catches and 100 plus yards this season. Also has 2 touchdowns. He's been productive in all sort of areas. Also, great matchup. Bills, 6 most fantasy points allowed to the slot this season.
All right. That's interesting. Yeah, the Bills, I don't have a good answer for the Bills' defensive woes this year. They're definitely missing some pieces from last year. Yep. And Matt Milano's banged up and Lorenzo Alexander retired and Jordan Phillips now plays for the Cardinals, sort of an interior penetrator for them as a pass rusher. But I can't figure out quite what's gone wrong with their defense. Offense is playing well.
This could be a week to get right. Get right game.
I would say so.
The Jets?
I would think so. They're trying to hand Adam Gase, I believe, his 32nd double-digit loss as a head coach.
Wow.
He has 30 wins.
Wow.
30 wins as a head coach and 31 double-digit losses.
That's unreal.
Is that good or bad?
Not good.
It's inexcusable. That's what it is.
Not great, Bob.
You know what? I'm going to pass on Gronk because we talked about him. We'll talk about him more. We have to talk about this game. But first, before we talk about this game, again, this massive, massive game, how do you banish high rates on car insurance, Dan?
I don't know. Field, you tell me.
You switch to Geico during Geico Week.
Oh.
October is their favorite time of the year, and the folks at Geico have been working even harder to cast out high rates and craft just the right policy for you and your family. Switching to Geico isn't so scary, especially when they could brew up some spellbinding savings just for you. So get a quote today at geico.com and see just how much everyone could save. No eye of newt needed. Happy Geico-ween, everybody.
Game.
Time to get into the Giants and the Eagles. We'll get to the Eagles in a minute, but we start with the Giants. And before we can get to the Giants and their outlook, Stefania, multiple wide receivers are banged up for the G-men. What do you know on Darius Slayton and also Sterling Shepard?
Yeah, so Darius Slayton's off the injury report heading into tonight's game. So
good.
Sounds like he's going to play. Obviously, he played last week, played about 80% of the offensive snaps, which is pretty normal for him. But limited production, right? Only 2 catches, although he did end up with a touchdown. So I don't feel like he's 100% healthy, but he's as healthy as they got, and they need him because Sterling Shepard is just coming back from turf toe injury. Now, Jordan Renaud said he was on the field Tuesday with his helmet at practice, and there is a chance that he plays in this game, but we really haven't seen much from him yet in practice. He's just being activated, well, just being brought, you know, off the IR, and they have that 21-day window to activate him. So this is still very early.
All right, so we'll keep an eye on, by the way, so that we'd find out by 4 p.m. today, if not sooner. So you'll get an alert on the ESPN Fantasy app. That's what I can tell you, is that you will find out if Sterling Shepard has been activated. So before we get to those two wide receivers and their outlook for today, Mike, let's begin with the quarterback, because the Eagles defensively this year have faced a sort of a mixed bag of quarterbacks thus far, coming off of a matchup with Lamar Jackson, who went crazy as a runner. Daniel Jones, also an excellent runner. He's number 20 amongst both your ranks and mine for quarterbacks. We talked about him maybe, hopefully, being a breakout candidate this year. Hasn't really worked out, but he was effective, and he has been effective in back-to-back games for the most part. Can he turn things around even further tonight against the Eagles?
I don't think so. He's 20th on my board. He has no finishes better than 19th this season. None. Zero. And the Eagles, by the way, have allowed one top 10 fantasy week to a quarterback that, of course, as you mentioned, was last week against Lamar Jackson, who had over 108 yards on the ground and a touchdown. So I just don't have a lot of confidence. I think he's going to have to run for 60 yards probably to bail out a good week. And he's been running more, and he still hasn't been a good fantasy quarterback. I can't start him in a 10 or 12 team league.
Yeah, how about that 45-yard run last week from Daniel Jones? Danny Dimes. Danny Wheels, more like
That's right.
Devontae Freeman has really carved out a nice role here for the Giants. His carry count by weeks and signing with the G-Men is 5, 11, 17, and 18. We're getting close to the point now, Mike, where we can kind of lock him in as a low-end RB2.
Yeah, averaging 71 scrimmage yards over the past 3 weeks. Also, 6 targets mixed in there. The problem here, Eagles defense, second fewest fantasy points allowed to running backs on a per-snap basis, allowing only 3.2 yards per carry. They've had no bad games so far this season against running backs. So Freeman is really just going to have to maybe fall into the end zone or catch 4 passes in this game to bail him out. So I'm nervous. I'm at RB22. That's a flex play.
Okay. Darius Slayton, as Stefania just mentioned, is off the injury report. That's good. Do we expect a potential shadow job from Darius Slay?
Of course. I mean, the name game here, right? Darius Slay ton and Darius Slay in this
one.
A lot of, I mean, that's what it comes down to. Do you trust the guy with ton? The guy without the ton.
That just blew my mind.
I would trust the guy without the ton this week.
You don't?
You're going with the cornerback.
I'm going with Darius Slay. Have you seen how Darius Slay has played this year? Dude has been unreal.
He has been awesome, and Slayton lines up outside 86% of the time. That's one of the highest numbers for a wide receiver. That means Slay will be on him pretty much every play in this game. It is going to be a tough matchup. So, you know, Slayton's been very good this season. He's played well enough and seeing enough volume that I have him 30th on my board, but that's down from where we'd normally expect him.
Is there a prize? Like, what happens if Darius Slayton has 8 catches for 100 yards and a touchdown tonight? Does he become Slarius Day instead for the Eagles? No?
Okay, I don't know.
I get it. I see where you're trying to go with it.
Is there a prize? Is there something on the line?
Yeah, there should be.
Yeah.
I don't know. We have to think about this. Maybe something we should have did before the show, because I got nothing.
Maybe if Darius Slayton has 8 catches for 100 yards and a touchdown, we can add running back eligibility to him on ESPN.
I'm sure Keith would do that.
I'm sure Keith would be very much on board with an idea.
Super easy.
Or since he beat the other Darius Slay who plays defense, we can give him defense special teams.
Oh, he can be an IDP eligible, maybe. You know what I mean?
Good idea. Yeah. We're going to figure this out by kickoff tonight.
These are all bad ideas.
Stefania mentioned again. It's not even a guarantee. So true. Terrible.
I love how under the radar it's just like, these are all bad ideas. Just let it go.
Sterling Shepard may or may not play, Mike, but he's a fade, it sounds like, even if he does give it a go. I mean, you're concerned about the number of snaps he'll play.
How about this for a stat? 17 consecutive games with 6-plus targets before that game he left early in week one.
Wow.
So, I mean, they throw to him when he's on the field. If you're desperate at wide receiver, maybe it's not the worst flyer, but I would try to stay away. He's 50th on my board.
Okay, 50th on Mike Clay's board. There you have it. Evan Engram. This is like, we have to rank someone in our top 12 tight ends. We have to get the 12. So that's how we end up with Evan Engram inside our top 12 tight ends consistently. I suppose tight ends have fared fairly well against the Eagles. But last week it was like Nick Boyle scoring the touchdown for the Ravens. So I don't know. Like, here's how I feel about Evan Engram. I think he's a really talented guy. He has 4.4 speed. 4.44, I believe, was his 40 time coming out of college. But they have barely gotten him going this year. There's been a lot of rhetoric about how he's running a ton of curl routes, which, you know, those are routes that are very close to the line of scrimmage. Okay, I'll get something in a moment. It's not really fantasy related, but we'll get something in a moment here, Mike. Anyways, Evan Engram, you want to play him?
Not really. He's 11th on my board. Like you said, there's just not a lot of great options in that area. And the reason he's that high is because he's handling a 19% target share, which is high for a tight end. But he has 0 top 10 fantasy weeks. The good news is he's playing the Eagles, who, as you mentioned, 4th most fantasy points to tight ends just across the board, really struggling in that department. And, you know, it matches up with their personnel. Their linebackers and safeties have been a problem area this season. So maybe this is the week he gets going. It's enough to keep him as a borderline starter in 12-team leagues, but I don't have a lot of confidence.
I just want to pass this along, not fantasy relevant. The Vikings are trading Yannick Ngakoue to the Baltimore Ravens.
What?
According to Shefty. Yeah, weird. He's been traded twice now in less than a year.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. Basically, the Vikings get back most of the picks that they got.
Ravens all in, though. I mean, he's a really good player. He's been one of the lone bright stars.
Him, Dalvin Cook, and Adam Thielen, but Justin Jefferson, I suppose.
Yes, yeah, so I don't know what's going on there, but they're throwing in the towel.
Yeah, that's right. Correct.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's get to the Eagles really quickly. And Stefania, we do have to ask a bunch of injury questions with Philadelphia. So we have already seen a couple of players be ruled out. One of them is not DeSean Jackson. Does that mean that he's A, playing, and B, should be expected to play a lot?
DeSean Jackson's off the pregame injury report. It's weird, right? Because he has not had a full practice until yesterday. That's the first time since injuring his hamstring in week 3. So I don't know how confident you feel. This is a situation where it's hard to have a lot of trust because Philadelphia is so desperate for pass catchers because they have so many injuries. Now, DeSean Jackson was talked about as potentially going to be able to go in last week's game. But I think they knew with a game coming up on Thursday, they wanted to wait and give him an opportunity to have a few more days. So I think they feel pretty good about where he's at. But you know my rule, you never know if a guy is past the injury, especially someone like DeSean Jackson, who has a history of these soft tissue injuries, missed most of last year because of one. You never really know till they get through the game whether they were 100% healthy. And obviously his teammate Alshon Jeffrey already ruled out. Poor Alshon had another body part added to the injury report. So went from limited practice where it looked like they were working him back and maybe getting closer to having him play. He's been out obviously all year because of recovering from that off-season Lisfranc surgery. Now has a calf injury added next to his name and did not practice on Wednesday.
Whew, man, maybe next year for Alshon. Just kidding. I don't know. Hopefully sometime soon for Alshon. It's been a long, weird journey for him recently with the injuries. Mm-hmm. Let's get into the Eagles quickly to wrap up the show here. And we start with Carson Wentz, Mike, who has figured it out one way or another fantasy-wise over the past couple of weeks. You've got him at 15 on your board, a little bit less optimistic than most. It's not a bad matchup for him, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's interesting. The two quarterbacks in this game, very turnover-prone this season. Well, Jones has been his whole career. Yeah, exactly. And they're both running a lot lately, too. We've seen Wentz, for the first time, I think, since that injury, right? The Super Bowl year has really started to run the football. But you're right, top 14 fantasy quarterback each of the past 4 weeks, hit a season best with third last week. The Giants haven't allowed many fantasy points to quarterbacks, but they face pretty light competition. Overall, I don't think they're as good as they seem on paper. So Wentz will be busy in this game with Miles Sanders out. So Wentz, again, borderline starter in 12-team leagues. He's in that conversation, at least.
All right. Boston Scott, a player we expect to take over for Miles Sanders tonight. Mike, you expecting the possibility of 20 touches?
I don't think he'll get there. He had 11 touches and 54 yards in week 1 in place of Sanders. He did leave that game injured, so that's important to note. He was on his way to a decent fantasy day. Week 6, with Sanders leaving that game, Scott played 31 snaps. Corey Clement played 5. Huntley played 0. He'll be involved, Jason Huntley, to some extent here. Scott will be the guy. He's 23rd on my board. He's a flex option, but I'm not getting too carried away here. I'm not as excited for him this week as I was in week 1.
Okay, fair enough. Travis Fulgham needs to be in your rosters now. What more do we need to see out of this guy, right? I mean,
nothing.
On rosters, he was available in 54% of leagues. He's now available in just about, I think, 37% of leagues. So good to see him being picked up. And you can start him this week, Mike.
Yeah, back-to-back top 10 weeks. Deshaun's back, but Ertz is out. Goddard's not going to be back, it looks like, till after the bye. So it should still continue to be the Fulgham show in this offense. And I said, nothing under my breath. Maybe we need to see him beat James Bradbury a few times. He may be shadowed in this game. There's a little risk. It's not a lock, though, that Bradbury will shadow him. Last week, he didn't shadow Terry McLaurin last week until the second half. So we'll see how creative the Giants get here. Bring some tendencies from Bill Belichick.
How about that? Okay. I like it. DeSean Jackson, if he plays, you pass him tonight?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, his last full game, he had 9 targets and 64 yards. He's a ton of air yards this season, so he could hit for a big play, but very risky.
All right, picking this game. Who do you got here, Mike? It's your team.
Eagles, 24-21.
I got the Eagles. I have no idea what the score will be because the NFC East is mad weird. Daniel, what do you got?
I'll take the Eagles for Mike.
Okay.
Thanks.
Kyle, you agree? Kyle says yes. Stefania, who do you got here in this Giants-Eagles matchup?
I'll take the Eagles.
Okay, we all picked the Eagles, which guarantees that the Giants will win this game tonight and probably do so by about 40 points.
Wow.
Do Do we have a trivia today or no?
I got a YouTube question, or a YouTube question, a social question, if you don't mind, real fast.
Okay, let's hear it.
This question comes from, and I'm going to pull it up here in our doc because it's right here. This question comes from Colin, wants to know, how many weeks in advance should you look at strength of schedule for trade purposes? And Mike, I want to give this to you.
This is a Mike question.
Yeah, so I've definitely been looking at that. I've talked about it a little on Twitter. I think that every situation is different, but you can definitely look ahead and try to, as you're negotiating deals, keep an eye on that and say, you know, maybe this is my chance to move on this guy. And a player that fits this bill, James Robinson, check out this playoff schedule, weeks 14 to 17, Tennessee, Baltimore, Chicago, and Indy. Chicago and Indy, wow, two of the best run defenses. I mean, that's tough. You're not going to feel great about him in your RB2 slot if you're playing for a championship. So if you got him, you're probably looking pretty good right now because he was a great find, but maybe now's the time to try and think about it.
Okay, great stuff. Great stuff as always, Mike Lay. We love having you on. We appreciate you. We'll see you in a week. We are back on Friday with a full preview of all things week 7 and more for Daniel, Stefania, Kyle, and Mike. I'm Field. See you guys tomorrow. Peace out. Tennessee, you're in the 06010.